This is File 60, Cycle 2. This is Jean McMillan. Today's date is July 25th, 2017. I am interviewing John Silliman, who's going to talk about the Twin Lakes Association, his commitment to herbicides through permits with the DEP, and he's also going to talk about the Twin Lakes Beach Club. He was president of the association for years and knows quite a lot of information. But first, we'll start with the genealogical stuff. What is your name?
John E. Silliman.
And your birth date?
March 9, 1934.
And your birthplace?
Bronxville, New York, hospital.
And I'm assuming that's located in Bronxville, New York.
Yes.
Okay. And your parents' names?
My father was Sherwood E. And my mother was Lois M. Boynton, B-O-Y-N-T-O-N. Her family came from West Stockbridge.
Oh, okay. And do you have brothers or sisters?
One brother, Daniel.
Okay. How did you come to the area?
My grandfather bought what is now the Options Institute in Sheffield, along with several other houses that came with the extended property. And my father had bought one of them, so we used to come up here since I was 5 years old.
Good. Long time.
To the house north of Taconic that was across the street from the old airfield.
Mm-hmm. And when did you buy the property that we're at now?
1980.
And you've been here ever since?
Yes.
Okay. How did you get involved with the Twin Lakes Association?
By default.
I run into a few of those.
I was asked to join. I can't remember who now, probably Mike Halp. And it's been an interesting experience.
Oh, yes. Everybody has said that. According to the list that I have here, you were president from 1996 to 2000.
Yes, I guess so.
Okay. Mike Haupt's got a lot of people into various things, hasn't he?
Well, Mike's heart is in this area.
Mm-hmm.
His grandmother and grandfather had a house here. His father and mother had a house here. His heart's here.
Yes. And that's wonderful because it's a beautiful, beautiful spot. Now, there was a period of time where the Twin Lakes Association was connected with the DEP in order to clean out the milfoil in the lake. And I'd like you to tell me about that. How did you fellas go about getting the herbicide permits?
You start with the invasion
mm-hmm.
of milfoil, which became a real pest for everyone on the lake. So it was an easy sell to get people involved in getting rid of the milfoil because everybody's property was impacted.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know what to do or how to do it. We knew that there was a Rube Goldberg machine that would cut the milfoil, and that had been going on for a while. But the problem was all that did was spread the milfoil further and create a mess on everyone whose home fronted on the lake, which then required pitchforks to remove the pieces that the weed harvester didn't harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And one time when I was president, we were meeting over at the Institute of World Affairs, and it came to our attention, I don't know how, that there was an outfit that was selling and installing little bugs that would eat the stems of the milfoil and cause it to die. And the meeting, this was an annual meeting of the association, they all got very excited and voted some money to further this idea. And we had the company come in, and they seeded these bugs amongst the heavier infestations of milfoil. And it didn't work, either because it was a hoax or because the milfoil was too thick and the bugs inadequate. And the next president was Lou Fox. And under the rules of the association, the former president becomes a member of the executive committee. And Louis Fox and I and the first selectman went to Hartford.
Who was the first selectman at that time? Was it Val Bernadone?
Yes, Val Bernadone. And Val was as concerned as we were about it. And so we met with a bunch of people at the DEP on Elm Street in Hartford. There must have been 10 or 12 people around a table. And Lewis and I discussed the problem, and Val chipped in and was very helpful. And as meetings go, it was a lot of idle talk, and we weren't going anywhere. And after about 45 minutes, this young man piped up in the back, said, "Well, what about diquat? D-I-Q-U-A-T, otherwise known as reward." And Val and Lou and I perked up our ears and found out more about it. It's used in reservoirs, and it works on filigreed weeds, but not pond weed, which is stronger and more resistant. So it was the perfect solution. So Lewis took over when?
2004, I think.
So starting in 2005, we started putting in milfoil.
He was 2000 to 2004.
Oh, okay. So it must have been around early 2000, 2001, 2002, somewhere around in there. We started putting through an expert. We started putting diquat in the lake at the places designated by the DEP. And it was magic. And it's been we've been doing that now for 15, 16, 17, 16 years. And we put in less and less every year because the milfoil gets thinner and thinner and less populated.
Wonderful.
One downside, apparently, although we haven't been able to connect it, was when the milfoil dies, it creates an algae bloom later in the the summer, but that goes away. But that hasn't happened in the last 2 years, so it may not be.
It may not be connected. It may not be connected, or it may be that there's so little of the milfoil that there isn't enough to create a reaction.
Who knows? I'm not a scientist, obviously, and the people we have who advise us can't tell us. So
not
far
to worry.
Be it from me. But the Diquat works. We now have a 2-year permit this year and next year. And we're going to continue to use it. It has absolutely no adverse effects after the last 15 years of using it. It works.
Don't mess with it.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And we've completely done away with the weed harvesting, obviously, which... I believe, although I don't know the numbers, I believe that it saved the town money because the cost of Diquat is less than the cost to operate and maintain one of those Rube Goldberg things.
There was a town meeting a couple of years ago. They had to buy a new one, a new weed harvester, and it was very expensive. I don't know, $150,000 or something like that for this thing. I was appalled, but what do I know? But I'm so glad that you found something that works in... And you do both lakes.
Oh, yes.
East Twin and West Twin.
Yeah. There are certain areas of the lake that, according to the DEP, has plants that are protected, and we have to stay away from them. It's a bit frustrating... Because one of the plants is called Megalodontia, phonetically spelled, like, and it's in certain areas of the lake, both lakes. And apparently it's a protected species in Connecticut, but not in Massachusetts.
Figures.
And so it's a little weird, but we're not complaining about it because the major part of the lake and the places where it's most populated has been cleared. There's no milfoil out in front of my house.
Perfect.
And I used to have difficulty getting my sunfish through the milfoil. Just as a diverse, Lakeville Lake, Winonsco-Pomac, should be using Diquat. It's the same water, same lake.
Yeah, I know.
And
but some of their membership is opposed.
They are totally misinformed. They think it's part of Agent Orange, which it is not. And the misinformation has led them to live on a lake that in 50 years will be dead.
You're probably right.
That's not my opinion.
Yeah, it's a scientific opinion. I've had this discussion with Bill Littauer, who's president of the Lake Winonsco-Pomac Association.
I know him. Yeah.
Lovely man. Tell me a little bit, please, about the Twin Lakes Beach Club.
Okay. As I said, my family has been coming up here since 1929, and we live off the lake. And when I was a kid, my parents would bounce from friend to friend to get on the water, including several on the South Shore, and also up on the North Shore. And my father... decided that it'd be nice to have a place on the lake. They were like hound's teeth trying to find them.
Sure.
Hen's teeth. So he and a bunch of other men, families really, got together and bought the old hotel, and I've forgotten the name of the woman who owned the property.
Dr. Smith?
No, it's next door to the Smiths.
Ah, okay.
Mabel somebody, I think. Anyway, she had an old multi-story wood hotel and a small house on the property. And I was only 10, so I don't know why it came on the market, but it did. And my father and several other men and families got together and purchased the hotel by forming the Twin Lakes Beach Club as a stock corporation to Connecticut mm-hmm. Stock Corporation. I think Cam Beckett was the incorporator. And lots of people subscribed to this stock, $100 a share, including the butcher in Canaan, and I've forgotten his name, but he bought 5 shares, and everybody was ecstatic about that. And we took it over, lock, stock, and barrel, and didn't really do much changes to it. The hotel became the clubhouse.
What did it look like?
It was a brown multi-story building. There's probably a picture of it in the Twin Lakes, in the current building. I don't think I have one, but it had a kitchen. It had an area in the side that was turned into a bar.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bring-your-own-booze place because we couldn't get a liquor license. And people who had young children, babies, could put them to sleep in the old hotel rooms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it worked out very well. And when I was able to drive, I drove over there in the summer every single day to go swimming, or
mm-hmm.
that was all that was there. And we used to hire a caretaker who lived in the small house and cooked the food and took care of the place. And there were some pretty wild parties because everybody brought their own. And
sure.
Had a little too much to drink.
Did you have dances there?
Yes.
Was it live music or was it records or?
Both.
Both, okay.
Live at the beginning because, you know, that was 1945, 46, 47.
Sure, sure.
I mean, 48, I'm sorry. Incorporated in 48.
Mm-hmm.
So that was before all this electronic gizmos.
Now, you told me a story about something that happened at the beach club when you were 14 about the kitchen fire.
I think I was older than 14.
Okay.
Because I was able to drive. Oh, I was a great deal older than 14. I think that happened in 1996. What happened was, we had for some reason there was a contractor on site. I think it was he was working on the septic system. And he and the president, I was there, he and the president were talking specs and mm-hmm. prices and all that stuff. And the fellow in the kitchen called out the fryer, the French fry fryer, had caught on fire. And it's just a kind of a surface mm-hmm. fryer mm-hmm. on top of grease.
Yep, yep.
And before anybody could do anything, this contractor grabbed one of these ice chests
yep.
full of ice and water and threw it on the fire, and that was...
Wrong thing to do.
That was an explosion, literally, and little fire bubbles went up to the ceiling, and the president, Craig Metz, was burned, not seriously, but the president of the beach club.
Oh, that's different than the president of this.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And the place burned down. It was all wood and a roof.
What was Craig's name?
Metz, M-E-T-Z.
Okay.
He's in Hilton Head now. He owned the White House on top of Cooper Hill.
Oh, okay. And so the building itself burned totally?
It was September, late August, early September. I think it's 96. The annual meeting of the beach club was that weekend, Labor Day weekend. So we brought this to the membership, and they all said, let's rebuild with no reserve.
Mm-hmm.
No way of getting money. There was a mortgage on the property. And one way to get some money was to bring a lawsuit against the builder for negligence in throwing water on the grease fire, which you don't do around here. And we covered, together with the Travelers, who was the insurer, a few bucks, not a lot. It was settled for less than it should have been, in my opinion, but that was one man's opinion. We had in the club a very talented architect who's still a club member, whose name escapes me.
That's all right.
He has a house on Cooper Hill Road, and he designed the plans. It could not be four stories, obviously, and we could not have bedrooms and all that because the money wasn't there. And a friend of mine who was a CEO of a company and I put together a financial package selling bonds to the membership, convertible into stock. And that, together with a mortgage, provided the funds to rebuild the place. And our traditional opening cocktail party was in late June, and we had it the following year.
Wonderful.
The place was built by then.
That's fast.
So that was somewhat of a miracle.
Miracles do happen.
Yeah. And it's the same building now that you see, mm-hmm. although it's been improved and well maintained. At one point, back in history of the beach club, Fred Miles, who was a tennis player, among other things, was a spark plug to put in the two tennis courts.
Ah.
I wasn't here at the time. I was either in law school or in the service. But Fred and some others put together the tennis courts, and of course that's been a great attraction.
Oh, sure.
Since, for the beach club. And John O'Hara, who owns all the surrounding land, and including the land over which the driveway to to getting to the beach boat is on. Was very generous in allowing the club to parking on some of his property they couldn't use anyway.
Oh, he's a nice man.
Yeah.
We have an interview that I didn't do, but we have an interview with him.
Well, he knows more than I do about history. The property that my grandfather bought was bounded on the south by the O'Hara sisters.
Aha! Good name. Is there anything that you'd like to add to this before we close? Either about the beach club or the association? Or just history in this area in general?
I really can't think of anything. I told you about my own personal genealogy, which I found very interesting, having a parent whose ancestors lived here and were members of the Congregational Church here in 1745 or around in there.
It's wonderful to have the background of the family.
Well, apparently it's in our blood.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Unbeknownst to us.
Thank you so very much.
You're very welcome.